Folks, this has really been a gift for a lot of you folks. I know it's a lot of you have children here. What a wise decision that is. Be able to get kids in this at an early stage so they don't have to reprogram when all that other stuff is already in there. And, folks, you're about ready to enter into a whole new realm of life and how your life can be everything you've ever wanted it to be once you make up your mind what you want, which is the hardest thing. I meet adults every day that say, what do I want to do when I grow up? They still don't know. So, folks, I'm very proud to welcome tonight, and please help me give a round of applause for Tommy Newberry. Thank you. I am thrilled to be here in Dallas tonight. Thanks to everybody who encouraged a friend, a loved one to come tonight. I'm going to make you think a lot. Over the next hour or so, I'm going to make you think about each area of your life, where you are now, where you want to be, and what is standing in between where you are now and where you want to be. Let me start by giving you a little bit of background. I feel incredibly blessed to do what I do for a living. I work as a personal coach for some of the most successful, some of the most ambitious, and some of the most creative individuals in business today. They come now from more than 60 different industries. And they're as young as right out of college to 65 years old. They're single. They're married. They've got five kids. They've got grandkids. They've all got one thing in common, and that's what really pumps me up about what I do. They find it unacceptable to succeed in their business life but fall short in the personal life. They find it unacceptable to settle for a mediocre marriage, for poor health, for low energy, for low economic success, and they certainly don't feel like they have to make the decision between, am I going to be a strong family person or am I going to be a strong economic success? It's a myth that you have to make a choice between those two. Over the last 9 years, as I've been working within the what we call the 1% Club is the name of the business, I have learned a tremendous amount. I've learned far more than I have taught, I'm sure. Right off the bat, I've learned what it takes to double or triple or even quadruple your income in as little as 2 or 3 years. I've learned what it takes to get rid of the physical, mental, and emotional clutter that bogs most people down and robs them of the life satisfaction that they're craving. And I've learned most of all that success, however you define it, is not what? An accident. Success is predictable. It's predictable. If you'll apply these 7 keys that I'm talking about tonight, success will happen to you. It has worked for thousands of people who've read the book. It's worked for the clients that I work with on a one-on-one and a small group level. It's worked for me. And these 7 keys up here will work for you as well. Before I get started, though, let me ask you, how many people in here have ever made the trip from Dallas to Houston by car? Okay, how long does that take? About 5 hours? Don't drive with her. Now, what if I change the scenario a little bit, because I want to prepare you for these 7 points. What if I said that, you know, the road is, what is it, 45? It's blocked off several points in between here and Houston. There's construction sites. And it's pinched off into one lane in several locations. How long would it then take you to get to Houston? Wait, how do you know? I haven't even given you enough information. What do you need to know? How many times is 45 blocked off? And for how long? Right? Because how fast it takes, how fast you can get from Dallas to Houston depends on how many construction zones there are along the way. And how fast you can get from where you are in your life today to where you want to be depends on how you get through those construction zones. How many construction zones are there and how significant are there? How long do they last? So the 7 keys that I'm going to be talking about can be looked upon as construction zones. We don't have to work on them all at once. We don't have to master this by Saturday. We just work on one construction zone at a time as we move on our way from Dallas to Houston or wherever it is that we're traveling to. If you're aware of these 7 keys, They're not even constraints. They're not construction zones. There's no bottlenecks. They're actually accelerators. And it's the difference between not being aware of what I'm going to talk about tonight and being stuck on a bottleneck road where you're stopping and starting, and you're going by car. Or if you're aware of these seven keys, it's like getting in a jet. How long does it take you to get to Houston? Yeah, 45 minutes, something like that. You get to the same place, hopefully, but you get there much faster. And what's the difference? I mean, life. I mean, how much of your life do you want to spend sort of going in circles or stopping and going, traffic? So as we go through each of these 7 points, I want you to think, right now, is this an accelerator in my life or is this a constraint? Because it's always one or the other, an accelerator or a constraint. To start off, I'd like to give you a personal life goal that sort of goes through each of these 7 points. Before I show them to you all at once, I want to tell you about a goal that's a personal life goal that has certainly impacted my life, and it illustrates these 7 points. I'll go through it real quickly, then I'm going to come back to each of the 7 points in a little more detail. One of my goals that I established in the late 80s, right about 1989, was I pretty much decided, okay, I'd like to find and marry the woman of my dreams. So I decided, well, you know, I'm teaching or about to start teaching goal setting. I'm into coaching. You know, why is it that people don't have goals for relationships? Not only once they're married, but why is it they don't have a goal to get into the right relationship? You know, and I might have had two or three experiences that made me think, you know, maybe a goal would work well for me. And certainly it doesn't take much to look around and see that what most people's success with marriage is equivalent to flipping a coin. What I decided was I'm going to set a goal. So I decided, number one, the first thing I had to do is figure out exactly what it was that I wanted. That's the result I was after. I made a clear, specific description of the person I was looking for. Number one, I mean, how would I know it? How much trial and error would I have to go through if I just sort of went here, and then I went there, and then I went here, and I went there? I made about 10 qualities initially, and then I upped it to about 50. I can't just make the goal, right? You ought to see her list. I can't just make the goal and just sit there, right? I made the list. Okay, great. I go back to my apartment. No. I make the goal, and then I say, you know, who do I need to get around in order to meet this person? You know, what are the exposures that I need to get around? I noticed one peculiar thing is that single people tended to hang out with single people. And I thought, well, that's a good way to remain single. Of course, you don't want to hang out with married people looking for a spouse, but one thing I noticed is, is people who are single and then they come to that point where they say, you know, if I find the right person, I'm ready. If they come to that point, they congregate with each other and they typically talk about how few good candidates there are anymore, how tough it is to find somebody, ain't it awful this, and they have this aura of singleness about them. And what gets ingrained is this image of I'm single, and they have that ingrained in their mind. That's the image that grows into their self-concept, and they start to see themselves as somebody who's going to be single indefinitely. Or they start doubting themselves. Am I the type of person that will attract the type of person that I want? So the next thing I did is I said, I'm going to start hanging out more with my friends who are already married. I'm going to get over the uncomfortableness of going there solo. And I'm going to join them for stuff and be around them. And I'm going to start to sort of pay attention to their conversations, their lifestyle, what they're talking about and thinking about. And as I did that, I began to develop this image of myself as married to the person of my dreams. And so my self-concept changed. I started seeing myself as it was a done deal. And then I started to really believe it. And as I started to believe it, I sensed that God had already answered my prayer. It simply hadn't been delivered yet. He had answered the prayer. I mean, that's a great way to think about faith is he's answered the prayer, but I'm not sure when it's going to be delivered. I hope it's soon, but it hasn't happened yet. But it was my attitude about that. In other words, I really believed it. So all of a sudden, I was a lot happier. I didn't feel like I was missing something. Something was void in my life. I just felt like it was on its way. I mean, if you ordered something, you know, and you pay for it, and you got confirmation number, you don't sit around and get upset that it hasn't been delivered yet. You know it's going to take 5 to 7 working days or whatever. So as I started to see myself, I said, well, you know, I believe it. Is there any evidence in my life that would show that I really believed it? Because there might have been a hint of doubt. So I thought, well, if God himself had put his hand on my shoulder and said, Tommy, I guarantee you this person is going to come into your life in the next month, what are some of the things I would do? I said, well, I'll start an engagement ring fund. I'll start saving. I mean, if I truly believe that I'm going to get what I asked for, I'm going to start preparing for it. And that's what builds positive expectations. Another thing I did is I had a house I'd moved into after my sister moved out. It was a big house for somebody who was single, and yet I'd filled up this whole closet in the bedroom. And I thought, well, what would be different if I were already married to the woman of my dreams? The closet. So what I immediately did, and this sounds sort of crazy, is I went in there, and it wasn't that big of a closet, but it was a walk-in closet, and I immediately took half of my clothes out of it. And I left one half of it completely empty, and then my stuff was over here. And so every morning, every night, when I walked into that closet, that's where her stuff's going to go. I mean, imagine what that does to your expectation. Day in, day out, day in, day out. And then the next thing I did is I said, well, if you're already in my life, what would I do? I mean, if I had prayed about it, if I had set a goal for it, if I'd done all the work I could do for it, I would then thank God for it, right? Well, why wait till after she's actually there? So I started, as a part of a daily routine, I started thanking God for the woman of my dreams. And I got specific. I said, particularly this, particularly that. Thanks especially for this. And then I started believing it even more, and my attitude just became great about it. Then I started taking productive actions. I started doing the things to make myself the type of person that would catch the attention of the person that I described. I couldn't work on her, but I could work on myself and make myself the type of person that would turn her head. Those were the productive actions. And those actions and everything else I mentioned lead to the result. And so I was working with some clients in 1993, and I had a 3-year goal that I was in the third year of. And that goal was to be engaged to the woman of my dreams by December 31st, 1993. And it was getting to be May. And while there were some good prospects, I started to get a little bit discouraged, and I spoke with a friend who said, what I was asking was, do you think I should just go ahead and push the date back? Because, I mean, it is May of the third year, and I'm not sure I'm making the progress that I need to make. And he said something that I've always remembered. He said, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, you know, with an egg where there's a little chicken in there that's developing and then ultimately going to hatch, if you look at the egg, what do you see? An egg. It's no different. And you would think, well, nothing's happening, and you could get really discouraged. But if you know that you're doing what's within your control, if you know you're handling the controllables, you're doing your part, then you have to be confident. You have to have faith that that little chicken is developing in there on the unseen plane, that it's coming to you, but it just hasn't been developed. And so I stuck with it, and in July, a client invited me to a concert. And I said, you know, I'd love to go, but you have to get me a date. And I was just sort of joking. And he goes, didn't you mention that you had some sort of list or something? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I did. And he said, well, tell me what's on it. And I read the list to him. And he goes, all right, let me work on it. And 2 days later, Thursday night, he called me back and he said, I found 2 people. And he asked me a few qualifying questions. And we settled on one person who ended up being my wife, Kristen, and we went to a concert, an outdoor concert, and she was very much interested in personal development. She had gone to lots of seminars and workshops. She'd had a couple of bad blind dates in the previous month or so, and so what the person said to get her to go out with me was, well, let me tell you about his business. It's a really neat business. And that intrigued her enough, which is sort of interesting because I found out that she also had a list of qualities and characteristics that she had been visualizing. And while they weren't as specific as mine, it was eerie. And about 3 months after we had been dating, I pulled out this list, and it was the list I'd written that had the qualities. And she began looking at the list. I told her about the list, but I'd never shown it to her. And so she looked at it, she started crying because it was so obvious that she was the person that had been described on the letter. So in that story, 7+ years ago, 2 kids ago, contains all the 7 points that I'm going to cover in a little more detail. And it begins with what you have to begin with, which is the end result.